Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Oya, a contemporary Japanese restaurant. For more information, visit oyarestaurantboston.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Japanese. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, a food writer and a director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from our studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli and supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen in izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I will try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Takashi Yagiashi, who is the owner of ramen restaurant Slurping Turtle in Chicago and Ann Arbor, yes. Michigan, and the best chef by Food & Wine magazine in 2000, and the winner of the James Beard Foundation Award for Best Chef Midwest in 2003 for his work at his French restaurant Tribute in Detroit. So today we'll explore his unique path from French chef to ramen master. Hello, Takashi. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Akiko-san. Long time no see. And you look great.
Thank you. I have a great radio face.
Oh, come on.
So you're from Mito City in Ibaraki Prefecture, near mm-hmm. Tokyo. And when you grew up, did you always want to be a French chef?
You know, when I was a high school student and I was very active, you know, I did so many different things. And, you know, I wanted to buy a motorcycle. I want to buy my new guitar. And because I had a rock and roll band and when I was high school.
Oh, wow.
So I'm always run out of money. And that's why after the high school and came home and, you know, I started work at a neighbor's restaurant. But, you know, I never wanted to be a chef.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just I thought, you know, that time is, 60s, 70s. All the chefs at the restaurant are so mean, you know, they're going to throw the knife. And, I thought they are totally mean animals.
Okay, and so you studied interior design.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like a completely different direction you headed.
Yeah, and the same things that I graduated high school, went to the design school in Tokyo, mm-hmm. and I was working at a restaurant mm-hmm. and because I needed support because, you know, I was party animals and, you know, chasing the girls all the time. So I needed to make money. Then I was cooking there and when I that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What kind of restaurant did you work at?
You know, I cooked at all different restaurants and Japanese Korean grill restaurants and kappo, that's the small counter Japanese food restaurants. And,
So, but, you know, you could have worked at somewhere else, but the food must be something for you, sounds like.
Yeah, and my father passed away already 25 years ago. He was always wanted to have good food because he loved drinking. So, you know, both my parents worked and my mother came home sometimes late. Then my father said, hey, Takashi, let's go out, have a dinner. Then he took me some, you know, always he choose a nice restaurant. It's not fancy, but food is always good. Then he say, oh, I'm starting drinking, you order anything you want to eat. I think that's time started it. I'm interested about food.
That's great. And eventually you decided to come to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So how did it happen?
Yeah, so basically I was a curious George, like a small monkey. It's always curious about everything. When I grown up in United States, America was a dream country. I love Hollywood movies. And when I was kids, I started reading about O. Henley's and O. Noble. And Great Gatsby was one of the favorite stories. And music, Allman Brothers to, you know, all different American band. So American pop culture was very, very favorite my thing. So, you know, I wanted to come to United States. Stay only 2 years, and I was planning to go back, but I'm still here.
Ah, so lucky for this country.
Oh, come on. Oh, thank you.
But I heard that you were kind of invited to this project, which is to open a Japanese restaurant in Chicago by someone you worked for in Japan.
Right, that's true. So I have some knife skills, you know, not great, but I have some experience in the restaurant. So Japanese restaurants in the late, early 80s and late 80s, and a lot of Japanese restaurants was open outside of the Chicago. So I came for helping them, and I did all different things, and walking the line, of course, sometimes washing the dishes. I did a sushi helper, and, you know, just I need to do, getting into the, you know, restaurant business in the United States. So Japanese food is more, you know, easy to get in.
So it was 1980s.
Right.
Like, so it must be really different to open a restaurant. Not like opening a Japanese restaurant in New York City right now. It must be.
Oh, absolutely. Huge different. That's why late career, and I wanted to cook more serious food. And I talked to my owner and my chef. And chef, I'd like to cook more serious food. And that time it's all everything. Sushi, sukiyaki, yakitori, you know, you name it. We have to do everything.
Oh, wow.
But I wanted to cook more something focused and more deep, something one field. But my chef told me, hey, Takashi, I'm so sorry that we can't do that because nobody understand. But today, look at it. All different. So much fun. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's wonderful. But, it, you know, in a way, it turned to be a good opportunity because now you're learning something else, which happened to be French.
So, you know, that's what I say. And after a conversation with my chef, and, you know, that time was starting that some chefs are getting to get spotlight, and especially French chefs. So that's why I feel, oh, okay, maybe I should have started cooking French food. That's why I'm getting to the French food.
Right. But how did you train yourself in French cooking?
So, you know, after the, several years I was working in Japanese restaurant, then my boss was so kind, and he introduced to the other Japanese chef. His name is Yoshi Katsumura, and late 80s, he was totally superstar, and his very unique approach is he used that all Japanese ingredients, fish and vegetable, and the Japanese plates.
Oh, wow.
And he cook, yeah, he cook, how to say, traditional French food. So, you know, he introduced me to starting work there. So I learned a lot from him, and unfortunately he passed away last year, and I'm so sad that we lost a great, great chef in Chicago.
Right, but he's a legend.
Yeah.
Right. And the also you had a job at Foster Umbria restaurant. So that was a classic high-end French restaurant?
Yeah, actually that times and there that restaurant is exist more than 25 years.
Wow.
They closed probably 5-6 years ago. And I started at 88 and as a pastry assistant. And I never done the pastry, so And when I got the interview from them, and I told them I have some experience about pastry, I totally lied because I thought I cannot get a job if I be honest. Right. So, and I worked here, you know, 2 years and under the Judy Contino. He's a fantastic pastry chef. So after that, I moved back to the kitchen, savory side. Then I became to the chef de cuisine. Yeah, so it was, you know, for me, they give me a lot of opportunity to continue to go into the right directions for me.
So that was the foundation of a classic French technique.
Right, yeah.
Okay, but it's great. For 2 years, nobody knew you couldn't.
Yeah, good things that they don't give me any recipe until I learned one thing. So that's a very, you know, strict way, and I learned a lot because these days people give you a recipe first, then you're going to cook from here. They don't do that way.
Oh, wow.
You're going to tell you what to do, then, you know, I'm going to remember my head and my body physically, you know, doing a lot of same things all the time. Then you learn one thing, then they're going to give you, okay, Takashi, here's your recipe.
Ah.
I love that.
Oh, wow. So your body remembers.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's a guaranteed your taste.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The goal is to make something good rather than following the recipe.
Right.
Right. Okay. And so in 1996, you opened your first restaurant Tribute near Detroit, which featured a contemporary French cuisine with an eclectic Asian twist. That makes sense because of your background. And in 2003, you were named the James Beard Foundation Award for the Best Chef Midwest. So first, why did you choose Detroit?
Well, I was in Umbria almost 9 years. And that time, they gave me a lot of experience. I went to the France twice. And the first time was Paris. And a short time, but I could work like 5-6 different one-star Michelin, 2-3-star Michelins. Then second times I went back to Saint-Étienne, that's the Pierre Garnier. He just got the 3-star in that time. And then I came back to the United States. Then they mentioned me that you're going to be chef de cuisine. Then continue to work there. Then after that, I became to the partner with the Richard Mellman, Gabino Sottorino, all these people.
So
yeah, I was so happy and you know, every day excited to work there. But one day, and one gentleman called from Detroit, then asked me to just come in Detroit, look at our restaurants, and it's gonna be unbelievable. Then I flying in and look at the restaurant. It's very contemporary. Umbria was a very classy, beautiful restaurant too. Then they told me one thing, that you can cook anything you want to cook. So that time Umbria was reputation of fine French classic, a little bit more contemporary. But French cuisine, that is very important to keep that way. So that times I was already, if I, you know, mixed up something with my these ingredients to my Japanese things, then
right. It sounds like a kaiseki cuisine. You cannot touch, you cannot manipulate.
Yeah.
So you needed to change.
So then I feel that way, you know, maybe I should move to Detroit, then more, you know, all mixed up things and more contemporary things, then that's why I moved to Detroit.
And, okay. Wow. And then, you know, your style was known for combining French, Asian, American cuisine. And so that can be seen as fusion with some negative connotation if you don't see the actual dishes. So how did you differentiate yourself from a fusion chef?
Yeah, I thought, you know, fusion doesn't bother to me anymore. Yeah, probably 10 years ago, 15 years ago, people think that the confusion food. And I think these days a change, and so many food is more confusion these days. So what I did is kind of pretty normal things that if I look back, you know, I really don't didn't bother to me that, you know, and we did so many James Beard Foundation dinner. We did invite all great chefs all over the country to tribute, and every year we did, sometimes twice a year. So we have a great chance to, you know, cooking with the other chef, then look at the other chef's plates. Just so advanced, and that they're so unique, and, you know, I feel that I'm the one of them, so I feel never feel that fusion is not bad food, but worse.
I think, yeah, it's everybody's, any cuisine in fusion. I think David Chang said that recently in his interview, and I agree totally. But do you have any rules that, you know, you, when you combine different flavors, do you have any rules? Like, I have one dish I found from Tribute that's black sea bass with somen and vegetables. And somen, of course, is a Japanese very delicate, thin noodle. So what was the idea, for instance?
To be honest with you, I don't remember the dishes. But, you know, I think maybe I braised with the somen and underneath of the fish, something like that. You know, somen is a very delicate thing, and almost like a Japanese angel hair pasta. And I think Japanese cooking called nyumen, that's the braised somen. And maybe I did that way. So it's kind of, it's very, if you want to cook something, black sea bass or even taro fish, and going to be really good matching with the very tender and soft texture of the meat, matching with the sun on the bed of the noodle. So.
Right. Yeah, I think somen is more softer than angel hair. So that makes sense to me. Okay, and actually, I interviewed you for an article in 2004, and you said Japanese cuisine is based on the formula of addition, and French cuisine is based on the formula of multiplication. So, what do you mean by that?
You know, that's the very, I kind of, yeah, I remember that you got an interview from you, then I say that, and, you know, I a little bit regret that I kind of, I say to Japanese chef or Japanese cuisine, then you guys not, doesn't have so much flavor about that. You know, so it's not true. And the interesting stuff, interesting things that, when I was a stage at Pierre Garnier, and that time I read about Pierre Garnier's comment about Japanese food. Somebody asked him about, what do you think about Japanese food? Then he say, very interesting, but it doesn't feel that flavor-wise doesn't have a wide flavor there, and not more, I'm looking for more universal flavor, and but look at now, the Pierre Garnier, he crazy about Japanese food, and he has a restaurant in Tokyo, and you know, he's so much influence from Japanese food, and I don't think he's not say that, you know, I didn't learn anything there, but when I was studying there, I asked him that, you mentioned that, kind of he feel that he should not say that kind of things. So I feel same way. Of course, I'm not comparing the him and me. You know, he much more. He totally over the crowd. My hero. So, but yeah, but you know, I think I wanted to say that because Japanese food is so focused about, you know, one thing, then. You repeating discipline with it, and you doing over some, you know, cuisine is more than 200 years. But at the same time, they try to improve that, you know, each year, each chef. So that's amazing.
Yeah, I thought, you know, I thought you were talking about different kind of mindset. So, like you said, Japanese is more purifying or just focusing on one flavor. So that it just shines. Because of such a poor country, we always wanted to utilize every single ingredient and part of it. But the French, you know, it's kind of a different mindset. I can't explain how it works, but yeah, it's fascinating that you compare that way. And you combine on the same plate. Yeah. And so I had a, back then I think I had one of your James Beard Beard House dinners, and I really like your plating. So do you think it's from your interior designer?
You know, I got a lot of questions about this because I went to the design school, mm-hmm. and I love design. Still now, I purchased that, book from about the interior design to the industrial design, and I love to, watching it and studying still. Mm. But I don't think that I'm learning from them. Maybe somewhere, but I always think that when you creating something, I want to make it beautiful.
Mm.
More than, just slapping, the food on the plates. But I don't want to spend too much time. Then, food is get cold, then get overcooked or something. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So maybe it's part of you naturally. You don't even think about it. Right. And in 2005, you left Tribute and you opened Okada in Wynn, Las Vegas, where you created a contemporary Japanese menu influenced by French cuisine. So it sounds like you turned to Japanese flavors more dramatically.
Right. So each restaurant I moved on, then I'm getting more
Japanese. Right. Why is that?
I think it's more interesting about Japanese ingredients and technique that, and I just cannot stop that going to that directions,
right.
And still now, and I love to cook sometimes cassoulet and classic
French
things. Oh, I love to eat.
Hmm.
Yeah, but that's the natural. I think it's going that way.
Mm.
Yeah,
one of the dishes is found from this Okada. It's the baked sweet sake kasu black cod momiso over leaf glaze. It's
I remember that.
Maybe you can talk about it a little bit, because it's a French style preparation. Mm. But right. The flavors are loaded with Japanese ingredients. Oh,
yeah. Totally the soybean world.
Right. The sake kasu, it's a byproduct of sake.
Yeah.
Sake leaves, right? Mm-hmm. And the morimiso, which is a fermented mixture of soybean, rice mold cultures. Mm. And it's normally used as dip rather than condiment. So,
right.
Yeah, it's like a concentrated flavor.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And so you opened another restaurant called Takashi in Chicago in December 2007.
Right.
And you earned a Michelin star.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of food did you want to cook there?
Yeah, unfortunately, we just closed last year. And so I need to move on. And I think we achieved so many different way that as a culinary side. Mm-hmm. And we got a Michelin star. We got the second rating from Zagat in Chicago. But financially, we are struggling at, and probably locations, maybe I wasn't good enough. So anyway.
Well, that was really bad timing for the economy, too.
Yeah, 2008, it's killed us.
But you survived 7 years, and all the reviews are amazing. So congratulations.
Thank you. And, but problem was, I opened a Sloping Taro a little bit later, and I wasn't there as wish as I can. But, Takashi was a very interesting locations, and small, tiny, only 55 seats.
Mm.
Then kitchen was tiny, but, I loved that. Mm. Everybody shoulder to shoulder, everybody work together. And I do expo and a little bit garmanje at the same time.
Mm.
And I can see all the plates coming up from kitchen. So basically, when we do busy night, 120 people and 130, and I checked all the plates.
Mm.
Nothing that's going to pass me without I seeing it. So it's very hands-on and
the personal almost.
Yeah, but what we didn't do there, one thing like Okada, like a Tribute, like Umbria, I didn't do that is one components, two components less, and try to get best ingredients we can get that day, but more simple and straightforward food, and not, you know, how to say, shortcut, not right. shortcut. But.
So it sounds like another step towards Japanese, pure Japanese
right.
cuisine.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, okay. Right, so we'll take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about Takashi's ramen shop, Slipping Turtle. So
okay.
please stay with us.
All right.
Today's program is brought to you by Oya, a contemporary Japanese restaurant. Chef Tim and Nancy Cushman opened Oya, a contemporary Japanese restaurant, in March 2007. Since opening, the restaurant has received numerous accolades, including Tim being named Best Chef Northeast by the James Beard Foundation in 2012. Oya was named by the New York Times food critic Frank Bruni as the number one new restaurant in the United States in 2008. Oya is a contemporary Japanese restaurant located in an almost 100-year-old fire station in the historic Leather District of Boston. The menu is izakaya style, which consists of a variety of small plates and is designed to encourage exploring a variety of flavors throughout the meal. The extensive menu includes creative nigiri-style sushi and sashimi, as well as a variety of cooked dishes like luxurious wagyu beef, kurubuta pork, and poulet rouge chicken. A chef's tasting menu, or omakase, is offered and consists of 17-plus courses. A grand tasting menu is also offered, consisting of 20-plus courses, most of which are designed exclusively for that menu. An extensive list of premium sakes, shochus, and Japanese whiskeys are served. For more information, visit oyarestaurantboston.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Meets, broadcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Takashi Yagihashi, who is the owner of Japanese noodle restaurant Slipping Turtle in Chicago and Ann Arbor, Michigan, and the winner of the James Beard Foundation Award for Best Chef Midwest in 2003 for his excellent job at the French restaurant Tribute in Detroit. So in 2009, after cooking French Japanese cuisine at the fine dining restaurants, you opened a noodle by Takashi Yagihashi, a quick service restaurant at Macy's in Chicago, which is named one of the five best noodle shops in America by Bon Appetit magazine. And in November 2011, you opened a Japanese-style ramen house called the Slipping Turtle, and it's a major shift from fine dining restaurant. So why are you so passionate about noodles?
Oh my gosh, this is a big mistake I made in my life. But, you know, when I was kids and I was a little bit weird kids, but I played baseball and when I was a kid, every day I wanted to be a major league baseball player one day. And, you know, practice usually finish 4 or 5 and my mother doesn't get home until 7 or 7.30. So my house and my my school is not far, and I was living in a big city. So when I coming back to my home and walk by, so many different restaurants I have to walk through. Then ramen shop is right there. Then I know that I'm too hungry to wait my mother came home.
Right.
So most of the time, I eat ramen or some snack. Then I eat the dinner again. So I remember that, you know, so much great flavor and miso ramen, you know, Sapporo shio ramen like that. So basically, noodle ramen is my soul food. Then that's why, you know, my mind is set up there.
So, you know, as we've been talking about how you've been shifted more towards Japanese, so maybe noodles, ramen, these are kind of your symbolic act of cooking Japanese.
Yeah. So interesting stuff that Takashi Restaurant, fine dining, and I did that. Published a cookbook, my noodle by Takashi. Then my server came to me, hey Takashi, why you didn't do that Takashi cooking book? Then you made it the noodle book. And a lot of customers ask me, hey, where is the, your noodle dish in Takashi restaurant? We don't do nothing. Then we have not busy Sunday brunch every Sunday because my locations, so many good restaurants do very casual Sunday brunch. So then my server suggests to me, hey, Takashi, why don't you do ramen? Then I say, you gotta be joking. We are the Michelin star restaurant, then we're gonna do the noodle. Then that's interesting, I thought. Then we did it. We have no PR, nothing. Second week, boom! Holy cow. But what I started it was everything almost handmade. Noodle. I used the pasta machine to make everything, you know, from scratch.
Wow. That's a lot of work.
Oh, my gosh. That's why I'm saying that I regret that because, you know, third week I realized that, you know, I have to come 5 in the morning or 6 in the morning because I have to start a fresh noodle. Then Saturday night, we finish like 1:30. So it was killing me.
Wow. And how many seats did you have for that restaurant, for the ramen?
I'm sorry?
Yeah, you know, I just wanted to know how much you had to cook, make noodles.
Yeah, when we busy time, we did, I remember that we have 55 seats, then we did 160.
That's a lot of noodles.
Then people get started mad because, you know, stupid ramen, they have to wait like an hour to get, you know, so.
Wow. Okay. So now you have officially a sleeping turtle. So what is the concept?
Yeah, so that's coming from we learned that, you know, people are hungry about ramen. And I opened in the Macy's in Chicago. That's before Takashi. And called Noodle by Takashi at the Macy's noodle shop. And, you know, when we opened, wasn't busy, but every year getting, you know, more people, getting more, you know. So we know that getting busy, then Takashi Restaurant's Sunday brunch is very busy. So, you know, I thought maybe we should give it a chance that could be happen. So we opened at Sleeping Turtle, and from day one, we get big hit.
Right. So the menus are ramen and other, any other items on the menu?
Right. So in Japan, if you go there, most of the ramen is only ramen and very few appetizers.
That's
like,
true.
Like, you know, gyoza, shumai. And, but I'm very, I wanted to have something more when I go to the noodle shop, not just only ramen. I want to have a little bit of appetizers, maybe nice cocktails, nice sake, and, you know, then finish with the noodles. And also we have a dessert, too. So kind of more all one package.
Right. Sounds like that's where your father used to like spend time, fun time, relaxing.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, but that's true that the Japanese ramen shops in Japan tend to be like... like, I would say, Peter Luger's. So, like, there's no menu. And you sit down, very limited, you know, the onion and tomato salad.
Right. Yeah, everything is like in and out very quick.
Right.
And nobody talk, nobody enjoying the music. Just focus about sloping. That's it.
Right. Okay. So, all right. And you have now two locations in Chicago and in another.
Right.
And last December, you opened a shop at Macy's in Manhattan, too.
Right.
Right. So that's great. Well, our listeners in New York City wants to taste yours.
Yeah.
They can go to Macy's.
You know, it's a little bit different that we do in New York and Chicago. But I think it's you got to try. It's really, really wonderful flavors. Yeah,
perfect for the season.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. And what kind of... before that, let me ask this one. So you... Sleeping Turtle earned Michelin's Bib Gourmand status. So what makes your noodles exceptional? Except for, you know, you said you make by hand.
Yeah, so Sleeping Turtle, and we have... we imported it and noodle machine.
Mm.
And we make every single day from the scratch.
Okay.
We get the fresh flowers and eggs and everything.
Mm.
So we make and probably 200 to 300 portions.
Mm.
And we're going to finish that day or next day.
Mm.
So we don't keep that too long.
Mm.
And you can taste that, pure flour and the egg and noodle.
So freshness. Yeah. And right. What's special about the machine? It's imported from
Japan.
Yeah,
that's very expensive. And my partner was very like, oh my gosh, are you going to? But you can buy almost like a car.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And only I have a fear is if break down, then what are we going to do?
No.
And, it takes a time to get, parts and all these things. So
right.
I cross my fingers still. It's more than almost 4 years, never happening yet.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, that's
of course,
why it's
we
expensive.
Take care of the very maintenance.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's a very, it's a very special, even special in Japan too, that machine is from... Hard to imagine. Okay. Should I ask how much?
Oh, I think we spend close to the $30,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And why did you name it Sloping Turtle?
Sloping Turtle, and actually this is my wife named it.
Mm.
And she's pretty good, something sense of the words. And she's been in Japan so many times.
Mm.
And but she's an Irish-Italian.
Okay.
Vicious, watch out. So
oh, she's listening.
Okay, I'm sorry, honey. Taro in Japan is very lucky animals.
Mm.
And they live long life.
Right.
And they're gentle.
Mm.
And they move very slow.
Mm.
So it's like a slow cooking, gentle.
Right.
And good luck for the long life.
Mm.
So sloping is kind of noodle. We eat a special technique for eating a noodle. Mm. So
right. So yeah. What is the benefit of sloping?
Oh, yeah. You know that. So when you slope, that meaning is you having broth and the noodle same time.
Mm.
So that's the best way to eat.
Mm.
Yeah, not just separating, just only eating noodle and having a broth.
Yeah, so the before the liquid drips down, you just
like that.
Right. And I think, personally, I think you taste more flavors. Like my palate can sense more flavors.
Mm. Wow, because you know that. I'm okay.
No, I think you breathe in air from your nose as well.
Right.
So you maximize your,
sense of
flavor.
That,
yeah, right, the receptors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's my theory. So, well, let's slurp. Okay, and so what kind of ramen do you serve at Sloping Turtle?
Okay, and always we try to do some authentic, that something you can have from Japan and very typical, like what are we doing right now is like Sapporo miso ramen.
Mm.
That's coming from north of Japan, Hokkaido, and very silky and savory, touch of salty miso and flavors.
Mm.
Then we put the chashu, that's the pork belly, sometimes shoulders. Then we put a little bit of corn and scallions and naruto, that's the fish cake.
Mm.
And we put a little bit, one of the touch of moyashi, that's the bean sprouts and cabbage.
Mm.
So it's a very savory, satisfying, very great, rich flavors.
Right.
Then we do that sometimes a little bit funky one.
Okay.
Yeah. And because we wanted to have a little bit creativity there, not just, importing everything from Japan. We wanted to create something that. That's that kind of things like we do. Turkey, we did, Thanksgiving week, we did turkey ramen.
Okay.
Yeah, roasted turkey breast.
Why not?
Yeah, with the paitan, that's the white chicken broth. And we did the with the bok choy and utuya mushrooms.
Mm.
It was so good too.
That sounds great.
Yeah. So Thanksgiving, come on guys, we're going to have ramen now.
Right. And I was looking at the menu and you have a champon ramen, which is from the south.
Right. Nagasaki.
Right. In Kyushu. So that's the opposite of Hokkaido.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the champon is known more for thicker noodles, and like they put everything available. That's called champon.
I love
like,
that.
Mixed
yeah.
up, like pork, scallions, like a fish cake, everything.
Right.
So I thought it was fascinating to find regional differences on your menu.
Yeah, so, and also we put a little bit of vinegar and the chili oil and the spicy Asian mustard. I love that. Maybe I'm going to go a little bit more south next maybe month, like Okinawa ramen.
Ah, yeah. That'd be interesting. Right. Okay, so you keep changing the menu?
Right. I'm thinking about maybe I'm going to start it to do is we have 51 prefecture in Japan,
right.
Tokyo and all. Maybe I should do once a month in one prefecture.
Right.
Like Ibaraki prefecture that's coming from.
Mm.
You know, I'm going to do special ramen for.
Right. Oh, that'd be great because each region has very artisanal products. So you can use one of those condiments. And,
Right. You know what is the mito is?
What it is?
We have some famous ramen and sauteed chicken liver. With the kabocha.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and the kind of shoyu ramen, but it's kind of a little bit, almost we put the gravy on the top with the garlic chive.
Right.
I tasted it a couple of times, and so good.
Sounds like it can be New York Jewish ramen, too.
Yeah, right. All right.
Okay. And so how do you predict the future of ramen in this country? Because there's so many of them now, and but... You know, like in Japan, every town is a couple of ramen shops, right? So how do you predict?
Yeah, I think we're going to do probably two directions. Mm-hmm. One is more authentic Japanese. Somebody going to be always pay attention what's going on in Japan, then bring it to the United States, then introducing it. Or some chef. Already Chicago, we have a couple of great ramen shops, like High Five and Oyster Ramen. They are, you know, American. But, oh my gosh, they're so good. They're creating American mind, American cultures. And it's not Japanese style, but I love it. I love it. Yeah.
So, interesting.
Yeah, that kind of a two different way.
Right. Yeah. So it's like a sushi now.
Yeah,
like
exactly,
really serious,
right.
And the price range changes. Right. And I really like the idea that, you know, 51 prefectures, and that's the ultimate feature of really special Japanese flavor ramen. Okay. So here's another question. I'm always asked this question too. So what kind of Japanese noodles or Japanese food do you think will be popular after ramen?
I don't want to say that because I'm going to open the restaurants.
Stay tuned.
No, just kidding, just kidding. But I think it's more, definitely more home cooking restaurants. That Otoya, that one of the teishoku. And I love to go there.
Yes, Otoya, I think one of my friends said, she described it, it's just so Japanese, as if you were in Japan.
Yeah.
And, you know, like baked fish to pickles to tonkatsu to anything, even ramen, but it's so well made. It's like just your mom cooked something very nicely.
I think that kind of the Bajon's restaurant get more.
Because the people understand more of the original. Yeah. Right. And, okay, and you mentioned your cookbook, Takashi's Noodles. And what about it? It's like...
I think that's very good, fantastic noodle book for the introducing that, like, okay, there my cookbooks introducing all different noodles, ramen, soba, udon, rice noodle. So if you take a look at it and you can cook for your, you know, day off, and you want to impress some, you know, friends.
Right.
I think it's very introduction of noodle cultures. You know, it's not made for the professional people. It's not. But, you know, it's good for the,
right, because
my wife to, yeah.
Yeah, friends. Noodles are not supposedly made by chefs, all those grandmothers, mm-hmm. in all over the world, I think.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so listeners, that's the book to learn Takashi's noodles. And so you have also have a sushi catering company?
Right. And
it's called Tabo Sushi by Takashi.
Right. And this is a totally, I didn't expect I'm doing it, but a friend of mine and owns the store, and they're from Michigan, and they twist my arms, and I know you can do it. Then, you know, fortunately, I have a good team at the restaurants, and I have friends, and, you know, so I told them I'm not, you know, I did a little bit about sushi, but I'm not specializing myself to be a sushi.
Mm.
But, you know, my team and my friends, and okay, let's do it.
And
that's why it did happen.
Okay, so sounds like you're more and more Japanese chef
yeah,
now.
Yeah, but, you know, this type of sushi is very, ingredients is so fresh. You don't believe me that end of the night, all ditch it.
Okay.
Oh my God, so bad. We don't use that, you know, next day at all. Basically, you're making all the sushi items every 2 hours.
Yeah.
So end of the night, we don't sell. Goodbye.
Right. Yeah. Or you eat in the kitchen. Right. And so as we have talked, you know, in the last 10 years, you changed the focus and the style of your cooking really dramatically from fine dining to,
right,
you know, the casual Japanese street food.
Mm-hmm.
So what's special about cooking street food compared to fancy food?
You know, it's so interesting that because the street food is, of course, it's not pretentious. And I think everybody has a different level. Some, my kids, they're very genuine, good taste, I mean, good palate, because they're so young and they understand that some difference of the salty or sour or however, you know, I'm getting, everybody getting a little bit old and we pass that kind of freshness of the palate. But if you show that some restaurant doing it and they're doing some unbelievable things, but that makes my kids make them wow fact. Maybe not, because difficult to understand. If you want to be, for example, if you go to the New York has so much great museum. If you see some artwork, it's so complicated. If you don't understand so much, doesn't make you cry or doesn't make you emotional. I think food is almost same. If you don't get it, you don't get excited about it. So street food is very straightforward. You understand so many things.
Emotional and triggers your emotions,
yeah,
memories.
You remember that.
Right.
You know, some restaurant I went there, 2-3 plates were so amazing, but some of the other dishes, I don't get it. So doesn't get my emotion doesn't kick in. That kind of things. So that's why I love home cooking. And I love street food because street coming to you make you cry sometimes.
Okay. That's great. So thank you for joining us today, Takashi.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, please come back.
Okay, I will.
So if you would like to know more about Takashi's restaurant, listeners, please visit slurpingturtle.com. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, please contact us at heritageradionetwork.org. And by the way, we recently launched a beautiful new website, so please visit our page, Japan Eats. And Japan Eats is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, and Stitcher Podcasts. And today's show was made possible by Corinne, and our engineer is the Jack Inslee. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.